chair. It felt strange sitting when everyone else was on their feet. He flinched when another hand settled on his shoulder. Guy had returned to his seat. He wore a grim smile.
"We are gathered here today to celebrate the lives of my three sons," the king said.
Cheers, clinked mugs.
"They arrived on the same day 8 years ago, and now they are fast becoming men."
At that, the three brothers couldn't help but to share looks of pride. Even Gryan seemed to forget his anger at Guy for a moment. The king continued,
"Gryan arrived third, but he shall never be last."
Gryan beamed, squirming under the weight of the stairs, trying to hide behind his mug.
"And he'll always be late," the king added,
drawing a smattering of laughter.
"My firstborn was Gareth."
"The shield!"
someone cried. One of the legionnaires, Cormac Rezin.
"Aye, the shield. Like my brother was before him."
His eyes rose to the iron ceiling, lingering there as he said,
"May Corrin forever ride through the great forest of Orion."
"What do you mean, like your brother?" Gareth blurted out. His face reddened as his father and everyone else in the great hall looked at him.
I thought his nickname was Thunder," he stammered, barely getting the words out.
The king's eyes were made of iron.
"Yes, it was. The shield is no nickname. It is your title as it was once his. Your burden, your calling to bear."
As if that explained everything, he turned back to the audience.
"My second son was Guy, your eastern prince, your heir to the realm, your future king and protector."
Gareth blinked, stunned into silence, trying to decipher the words his ears had just heard, trying to make sense of the senseless. Beside him, Guy stood, his eyes meeting Gareth's for a stark moment, before passing on and roaming across the room, the eastern sigil seeming to grow larger on his breast.
"Long live the king! Long live the king!"
the people chanted. When you face the truth, stare back at it and don't blink. If you can do that, you will be fine. Gareth's head was in his hands when his mother's words came back to him. The truth? What does that even mean? That Guy was always meant to be king and me the shield? And what is the shield supposed to do anyway? After his father's speech had ended, the three brothers were whisked away, split up, as they would each be going on a separate quest for the final portion of their name day celebration. Gareth had been left alone at the castle's western entrance. Well, not completely alone. Chaperoning him was Bjorn Stonesledge himself, the iron-marked, his hulking frame resting against the wall, his battering ram elbows on his boulder-like knees. Gareth was sitting on the ground, still clad in full armour, his stomach roiling with having overeaten at the feast. He glanced at Bjorn, whose eyes were closed. His chest rose and fell heavily, as if he was sleeping. Gareth cleared his throat, and the man's eyes cracked open.
"Yes, princeling. Ask me what is on your mind."
Gareth's mouth went dry. Not because the man had guessed his intentions, but because he was afraid of the answers. Only something bad could explain his mother's melancholy, the way Guy was unable to meet his eyes, and why his father hadn't touched his mug of ale all night.
"You are the shield," Bjorn finished for him. "Not a nickname, a title. One your uncle held before you. But I can't tell you anything other than that. Your quest tonight will reveal the rest.
But
I can tell you this. You were born for greatness, princeling. Even if it's not the greatness you expected or wanted."
Gareth tried to swallow, but his spit stuck in his throat. He nodded, trying to put on a brave face when all he felt was nervous. "When you face the truth, stare back and don't blink." He was pretty certain he'd blinked a lot since finding out his brother would be king. "Not any more," he thought, locking his lids open, staring into the darkness gathering on the iron walls of Feria.
A silence-shattering sound snapped him from his concentration. His entire body jolted as he turned toward it. It seemed to have come from beyond the walls, somewhere in the forest. A scream.
"Someone needs you," Bjorn said, gesturing toward the gate which swam open, channeled by some hidden Orion.
Gwendolyn Storm, perhaps?
"But I'm just—" "Go!"
The strength of the man's voice obliterated the dozen excuses he'd been forming. "I'm just a boy. I'm not supposed to leave the castle walls at night. I don't even know who screamed. It's my name day, and I'm supposed to be waiting to go on a quest." He pushed to his feet and ran, his stride slower than usual due to the weight of the plate surrounding his body. The full belly didn't help either. The forest consumed him, metallic branches growing iron tendrils that seemed to beckon to him, reach for him. A strange sound that was half fear, half determination groaned from the back of his throat, and he plunged forward into darkness, raising his arms above his head to ward off an attack from above. Nothing came, and he stumbled, realizing he expected some force to push against him. A cloud passed somewhere overhead, obliterating what was left of the light from the moons and stars. Skidding, he stopped, his lungs heaving, gouts of breath panting from his lips. Silence. "What am I doing?" he thought. "I should go back." Another shout shredded the still fabric of night, and he flinched. It was closer this time. And familiar, somehow. "No, can't be. Guy is on his own quest." But then another shout, more of a war cry, one he'd heard 1,000 times during training. "Gryon," he thought. Any thoughts of returning to the castle flew from his mind like an oarhawk bursting from a bough. His brothers were in trouble. That was all that mattered. Despite the complete darkness that seemed to block his way forward, he charged ahead with reckless abandon, hoping he wouldn't run headlong into an iron-sheathed trunk. He stopped occasionally to listen for more shouts, and each time he did, they seemed to come from another direction. Though he was hesitant to leave the relative safety of the path, he eventually cut to the left after hearing another shout, picking his way through metal trees and iron bushes, trying not to cut himself on the sharp edges. He rounded the trunk of a tree so large around 12 men could have joined hands and still not surrounded it, and then nothing. He froze. The area in front of him was large and empty, a muted grey murk without the typical black shapes of the forest. Gareth just breathed in and out, trying to catch his breath, contemplating what to do next. He'd never heard about a clearing this large in Ironwood, especially not so close to the castle. Somewhere in the distance, a scuffle caught his ear. Shapes emerged, shadowy forms moving through a world of grey. Shouts rolled like thunder, accompanied by lightning strikes of steel meeting steel. An arc of light blazed forth surrounding him, so bright after the darkness that he might have been looking into the face of the sun, forcing him to shield his eyes with his hands. "All lights," he thought. Orion channelers would capture the reflection of lanternite in the ore as it formed. One ore light was usually enough to light a large area, and he'd never seen so many in such close proximity. More shouts, the sounds of battle approaching. Who is attacking? The west? The north? The south? Doesn't matter. All that matters is that Guy and Gryon are in danger. Something brushed against his side and he jumped, but whatever had touched him seemed to have moved on. He peered through his fingers, blinking rapidly as his eyes adjusted to the brightness of the clearing, which truly was enormous. 100s of soldiers clashed, half of them Eastern Legionnaires, and the other half an indeterminable enemy, clad in crimson armour, their faces hidden. "There!" He spotted Gryon, now clad in armour, doing battle with a foe twice his size but holding his own, parrying strikes with the perfect form instilled in him by hours spent in the training yard. Every so often he would release his trademark battle cry as he counter-attacked. Gareth started toward him, and something slapped against his thigh. He looked down, shocked to find a sword hanging from his waist, sheathed in the scabbard attached to his armour. His mouth dropping open, he pulled it out, a thrill racing through him as the light caught the edge. This was no practice sword, the edge honed to the sharpness of a razor blade, the point a dagger meant to pierce flesh and bone. Raising his weapon, he rushed into battle, releasing a cry of his own. The first soldier he met was one of their own, Horge Drummond, a barrel-chested career legionnaire who occasionally let Gareth and his brothers hold his sword and shield. He almost always bore a smile and jape on his lips. Not now. Now his mouth was twisted into a snarl, his eyes dark orbs of fury as he hacked at three crimson opponents at once, kicking one back while whirling to slash another across the shoulder. The third he bull-rushed, smashing the crown of his helm into his midsection, rocking him back. The sheer violence of the battle was beyond Gareth's wildest imagination. Twisting away, Horge regained his feet, noticed Gareth, and shouted, "To Guy! Save the future king!" "Where?" Gareth was about to ask, but the legionnaire was already pointing, pushing him toward where he finally spotted Guy. His heart dropped to his feet. Guy was also wearing armor, but his helmet was missing, his long ginger locks askew. He was backing away from a red-clad foe who continued to strike with forceful slashes from a massive broadsword, pushing the prince back. Though Guy tried to block each blow, he was clearly outmatched. Gareth found his feet, churning his legs as he ran toward his brother, who was all alone, separated from the rest of the soldiers. Another powerful strike, this one knocking the sword from Guy's fingers. Guy backed away, trying to turn to run, but he wouldn't make it in time, couldn't make it in time, not if he was a man grown.
"Ah!"
Gareth yelled, rushing in from the side, throwing himself between the enemy and Guy, bringing his sword up in the nick of time, the impact shuddering from his sword to his hand to his arm, instantly numbing muscle and tendon. Of their own volition, his fingers opened and he dropped the blade. The enemy laughed, swinging his massive weapon from side to side with a flourish. Guy tried to shoulder his way past Gareth to protect him, but Gareth held him back with one arm. "Not this time. I am the shield. Stay behind me," he growled, surprising even himself with the forcefulness of his tone. This was truth. This was purpose. To save my brother's life, he realized. To be his shield. Oh, awe, he thought, realization dawning in his mind. His uncle, Corin, didn't just die in the battle at the Razor. He died to protect his brother, who was now the king of the realm, Gareth's father. Corin had been the shield. And now I am. This was the truth his mother had alluded to earlier, when she told him not to blink, to face it head on with honor, with loyalty, with duty. And Gareth, only 8 years old, but well on his way to becoming a man, didn't blink. Not as his enemy kicked him in the chest, rocking him back. Not as the large man loomed over him, his sword raised over his head. He was going to die, yes, he knew, he knew. But he was dying so Guy could live. The brother who had always stood up for him, always protected him, even when he didn't need him to. The moment before the blade fell, he realized something else. Guy knew. This whole time, Guy knew he would be king, and that Gareth had been born to protect him. "Goodbye, brother," he thought. "Be the great king you were born to be." The edge of the blade flashed with awe-light as it arced downwards, and then stopped. The tip was a finger-breadth from his eye, glittering. What happened? He thought, his breath trapped in his lungs. Had his foe been slain by another? Another truth linked together in his mind, like a broken chain forged anew. There's no blood. Though the intensity of the battle had taken his breath away, he'd yet to see a single drop of blood, not on blade or skin or ground. Even the blade hovering above him was clean. He frowned. The blade lifted, his foe tossing it aside, raising a hand to lift his faceplate. His father, Auron Ironclad, king of the Eastern Realm, stared down at him with proud eyes and pursed lips. Were those tears twinkling in his eyes?
"Son, today you became a man.
You are ready to take the oaths of the shield.
He extended a hand. Finally, Gareth blinked, and then he clasped his father's hand.
I give my life for yours, freely and without exception, Gareth said, repeating the words his father had taught him. He said the words to his brother, Guy, whose expression was serious, but not without emotion. He could almost see the mask fracturing around the edges. You shall be king, and I your shield, from this point forward, until the day I die.
Guy's lips opened, closed, opened again.
I shall honour your sacrifice by my service to the realm, by ruling with honour, always maintaining the best interests of our people. Before making any decision, I shall consider what you might have done. You shall always be my hidden counsel, my brother, my shield, from this point forward, until the day I die.
The last word spoken, there were no cheers from the audience gathered to witness the ceremony. Gareth and Guy clasped hands, and a thousand unspoken words seemed to pass between them.
I'm sorry, Guy mouthed. I know, Gareth said, but you don't have to be.
They turned to face those who continued to watch. Heads nodded in appreciation, and fists were pressed to chests in a show of loyalty. Gareth's father beat his own chest, while simultaneously biting his lip. Gareth's mother kissed her fingertips and pushed them toward her sons. Grian, however, refused to look at either of them.
As usual, I might as well not exist, Grian said.
He hadn't stopped moping since the ceremony. They were supposed to be polishing their armour, but he was playing with a hangnail on his thumb. Gareth said,
You would rather be the shield?
Guy looked away, though he continued to polish his breastplate.
Yes, Grian said without hesitation. I would rather be anything than third. The brother without purpose. Guy will be king, you will be his protector, and I will be forgotten.
Guy stood suddenly, shoving his armour to the side.
You are so selfish, you know that?
He snapped. He stalked away, slamming the door to the armoury behind him. Grian looked at Gareth, sighed.
Sorry. I know neither of you chose this. Can you believe Guy knew the whole time and never told either of us?
Gareth wished his brother wasn't so fool-headed sometimes.
That's because he hated it. He still hates it. He would rather the roles were reversed.
Grian seemed to chew on that for a while, and then finally ripped off the nail and tossed it away. A spot of blood welled from his fingertip.
Sorry,
he said again, sucking on his thumb to stop the bleeding.
You already said that. I know. It's just, I feel left out.
Gareth shook his head.
Ore monkey,
he muttered.
What was that? I said you can be a real ore monkey sometimes.
Grian was on his feet in an instant. Gareth followed him, refusing to back down. Grian pushed him.
Don't call me that. Why? It's true.
Grian shoved him again, harder.
Why? Because I want to be a part of the ironclad legacy. Because I want to follow in father's footsteps, or Uncle Corrin's, or somebody's. No, because you always act and never think,
Gareth said, jamming a finger against his skull. That stopped Grian cold.
What are you talking about? You are second in line for the throne, you ore monkey. You could be king some day. That's more than I can say.
Grian's eyes widened. Slowly, a smile worked its way onto his face.
I hadn't thought of that.
The smile quickly faded.
But first, you and Guy would have to...
He trailed off.
Yes, we would have to die. But I will die before Guy dies. I will die to protect him.
Grian stepped forward, all fight having left him. He placed a hand on Gareth's shoulder.
I know you will. You are a good brother, and if I ever become king, I will honour both of you.
Several months had passed, and talk of the shield and the line of succession had moved on to other topics. the spring harvest, another promising tunnel that might lead through the mournful mountains, news of the civil war in the south, and the king's most recent order to rebuild the Bridge of Triumph in order to mount an attack on the west. But Gareth hadn't forgotten. It was the last thing he thought about before bed, and the first thing he thought about when he woke up. It was like a shadow haunting his every footstep. One day he would die. Not of old age or some rare disease or a terrible accident, but to save his brother's life. It wasn't so much the fear of death that left him feeling as empty as a dried-out husk, but the fact that the day he was born, the days had started counting down, like an hourglass turned over, spilling its sand through a glass tube. He wasn't so young and naive that he didn't realize that every man had their own hourglass. It was simply that his was much smaller. For all he knew, he might be halfway through his life already. It was that thought that stole sleep and made him feel uneasy. In public, he hid his feelings well. He relied on humor and banter more and more to keep from being sucked into the dark hole that seemed to be beneath his feet. Now, however, as he watched the swift-moving river through Ironwood churn past, he couldn't help the darkness that surrounded him, despite the brilliant light of the noonday sun. "Oh," he muttered, "I'm pathetic. I bet Uncle Corrin never moped around like this. I bet he embraced his role as the shield. I bet he relished marching into battle to protect his brother." He was pulled from his thoughts when he spotted something gleaming in the sky. He thought it must be an orhawk, but then it fell, dropping rapidly toward the forest. It clinked off branches, tumbling awkwardly to the forest floor, landing somewhere on the opposite side of the river. Something drew him to it. Curiosity, perhaps? He stood on the river bank, considering his options. There was a bridge downstream, but it was a half-day's walk, which meant a full day to return to this point on the opposite side. During the summer, his brothers and he would often swim in this very stream, when the water levels were low and the currents weak. This time of year, however, the river was fed by the ice melt from the mournful mountains, turning it into a cold, powerful river. But that thing that fell. Gareth pulled his shirt over his head, tugged off his boots, and prepared to jump. The moment before he leapt, he heard a shout from behind, but he was already airborne, his head twisting around to see who had called out. Cold water and bubbles surrounded him, and something seemed to grab him by the feet, tugging him downward. Thankfully, he'd managed to hold his breath, and his feet found the bottom, pushing off hard as he swam toward the surface. He was a reasonably good swimmer, better than Gryan for sure, though not as strong as Guy. His head burst from the river for a long moment, and he swiveled to see where he was. The forest seemed to be rushing past far too quickly, the current far stronger than it had appeared from dry land. The force from below grabbed his ankles once more, threatening to pull him under. Just before it did, however, he spotted a fleeting form sprinting along the riverbank. "Gareth!" the form shouted. Water covered him once more, even as he recognized the voice, the form. Guy. He pushed that thought from his mind as he struggled against the current, which might have been a dozen foes pulling at his arms, his legs. Any ideas of reaching the opposite riverbank vanished as he began to fight for his life. "I'm the shield," he thought. "I can't die now. I have to save my brother's life." But the river had other plans, dragging him across the bottom with a powerful undertow, scraping his exposed stomach and back with sharp stones. There was a brief respite when the current weakened, and he fought his way back to the surface. Guy was even with him now, his strides long. "Hang on!" he shouted. "I've got you!" Panic set in as Gareth realized what Guy was about to do.
"No!"
he tried to shout, but a whitecap hit him in the face and turned the word into a gurgle. Taking two more long strides, his brother leapt into the water, disappearing with a splash. Gareth didn't know how long he'd been in the water, only that every time he was sucked under, it was harder to fight back to the surface. His lungs burned, his arms ached. His feet had been bashed and bruised against so many rocks they felt numb. Each time he managed to bob above the water and take a breath, his brother was closer, his teeth gritted, his jaw locked in determination as he cut his arms through the water and kicked his feet. go!" Gareth tried to shout the next time he emerged, but was pulled under once more. He kicked hard and pulled through the water with his hands, popping up once more.
"Back!"
he screamed. But then his brother was there, his hands reaching under Gareth's arms and buoying him up.
"I've got you," he breathed, his voice strained.
"You'll never get me to shore," Gareth said. "You have to save yourself. You're the future king." "I'm sick of people saying that,"
Guy grunted. Gareth could feel his brother's legs kicking beneath him, churning up the water as he swam backwards.
"I'm your brother, and you're mine. We can be each other's shields for now. Grian's too." "Guy, please stop,"
Guy said.
"The rapids are coming. I need to concentrate." "Oh, awe,"
Gareth thought, his heart sinking even further.
"We're both going to die."
The iron rapids were the most treacherous portion of the river, especially this time of year. He twisted his head to look downstream where the channel narrowed, forcing all the water into a small chute flanked by high cliffs. Interspersed across the water were sharp-edged boulders protruding from the water. Both the rocks and cliffs glittered in the sun, their edges and faces forged of iron from the forest's ore deposits.
"Guy,"
Gareth said, and he hated the desperation in his voice. He was supposed to be a man now, but to his own ears he sounded like a helpless child.
"I'm not leaving you,"
Guy said.
"You must. Perhaps this is the way to save your life, by giving my own." "No."
There was no room for argument in his brother's tone. The weariness, the fear, the shadow of death, it all caught up to Gareth in an instant, and tears sprang from his eyes. He didn't want to die, no, but more than that, he didn't want to fail his brother, his people, the kingdom the ironclads had served for so long.
"It's going to be okay,"
Guy soothed, seeming to realize his brother's distress. The opportunity for words passed as the water swept them along faster, taking Gareth's breath with it. A deadly-looking rock passed rapidly to one side, narrowly missing them. Another loomed dead ahead.
"Kick!"
Guy shouted. Gareth kicked as hard as he could, his legs tangling with his brother's as he did the same. They began to shift horizontally across the rapids, slowly, inch by inch. Not fast enough. The boulder seemed to race toward them with the speed of a charging horse.
"Ah!"
Gareth and Guy cried in unison as the rock smashed into them from the side. A bolt of pain shot through Gareth's hip, and he felt Guy's right arm loosen its hold across his chest. For what felt like an eternity, they spun together in a one-armed embrace, the sky and metallic tree branches swirling overhead. Then the river picked them up, launching them over a slick rise, slamming them into a frothing pool of white water. Up became down, and Gareth swallowed a breath that was as much water as air. He lost hold of his brother. Various parts of his body were jolted against rocks as he tried to break free of the whirlpool. But then he did, the river once more pulling him downstream. Guy was just behind him, kicking to catch up, grabbing him again. More rapids approached ahead. Gareth felt like crying. Minutes felt like hours, hours like days. But eventually the river spat them out, bedraggled and bruised, exhausted and broken. After the harrying speed of the tumbling rapids, the wide river felt like a peaceful float downstream. Gareth's eyes closed. The idea of sleep was enticing.
"I'm too tired to drag you to shore,"
Guy said.
"Hmm?
Shore? What was his brother talking about?"
"We both have to kick."
Darkness began to fold its wings around him.
"Snap out of it,"
Guy shouted, biting him on the back of the neck. Gareth blinked.
Did his brother just bite him?
"I'll do it again," Guy warned.
"Now kick."
Barely able to feel his feet, Gareth began to move them back and forth through the water.
"Faster."
He did, and soon a line of bubbles was trailing after them, the opposite shore getting further and further away. He felt his heels begin to drag across muck and rocks.
"You're much heavier on dry land,"
Guy said, grunting. With a final heave, they sprawled in a heap on the grassy shore. Above them, metal arms grew and shrunk, changing with the passing winds. The river burbled happily nearby, a soothing melody. They breathed. Eventually, they slept.
"You can't keep doing this," Gareth said. "You could have been killed."
They sat on the riverbank, drying out in the last dying rays of the sun. Neither of them seemed keen to begin the long march back upstream to Feria. It would be the middle of the night before they arrived at the castle. The king and queen would not be happy.
"I think what you mean to say is thank you," Guy said, inspecting the cuts and scrapes along his legs and arms.
They were both a bruised, bloody mess.
"Thank you," Gareth said, meeting Guy's eyes. "But you can't keep doing this. I'm supposed to protect you. You are the future king. I told you not to. It's the truth. You are the one who will rule after father is... when it's your time." "It's a dumb tradition," Guy said, skipping a flat metal stone across the water. "How long have you known?"
"Since we were six.
Hardy told me, even though he wasn't supposed to."
2 years. Or, how did he keep it a secret for so long?
What did he want to say? What could he say?
"Come on,"
Guy said, standing.
He held out a hand to help Gareth up. "We should head back."
Gareth stared at his brother for a second, and then accepted his hand.
"I'm sorry," he said, "for everything."
"You're not the one who should be sorry," Guy said.
When Gareth started to object, he added,
"No more swimming until summer, agreed?"
"Aye,"
Gareth said, finally managing a weak smile.
"No more swimming."
Guy offered his own serious smile and threw an arm around his twin. Together they began trudging upstream, water and blood streaming down their legs as long shadows crept through the forest. Hours later, in the dark, silent throes of night, they arrived at the castle gates.
"Who goes there?"
someone growled, simultaneously casting an awe-light over them.
"Orion, protect us all! Prince Guy? Prince Gareth? The king and queen have been worried sick!"
The Orion atop the wall placed his hand on the metalwork, and the gate channeled open. They passed through, too tired to speak. Several legionnaires immediately surrounded them, forming an escort back to the royal quarters. They offered a wagon, but Guy refused. Gareth grinned at his brother. They'd made it this far. They could walk the rest of the way under their own flagging strength. When they reached their destination at long last, their parents were already standing outside waiting, having heard the commotion. The king wore nothing but half-trousers, his thick chest coated in a carpet of red hair. He waved at the soldiers to depart, and they marched away, back to their posts.
"Where in Orion's name have you been?"
he demanded after they were gone, taking a step forward menacingly. Gareth opened his mouth to speak. Quickly, Guy said,
"I felt like swimming, but underestimated the current. It swept me into the rapids. Gareth saved my life."
Gareth stared at him in shock, so stunned he couldn't even find a single word of denial.
"You're the future king," his father said, "not the court fool, although maybe you should be. Get to bed, both of you."
With that, the king turned away, stomping inside. Guy nodded once at Gareth, stepped over to give their mother a quick hug, and then followed. Gareth stood there, still trying to make sense of what had just happened.
"Do you have something to say?"
the queen asked, her eyes stern and sharp, despite the hour. She wore a long dressing gown, though he could see her boots poking out beneath it. He wasn't sure what was worse, calling his brother a liar, or admitting that he was the fool who'd almost drowned.
"I already know," the queen said. "You don't have to say it."
"You do? How?
I'm your mother. I can smell a lie from 100 feet away. Should we tell father?"
She cocked her head, seeming to consider.
"No, it will serve no purpose. It was a fool thing both of you did today."
Chastened, Gareth hung his head. His mother put her hand on his shoulder.
"Learn from this. There is nothing wrong with brother protecting brother, even the future king protecting his shield. But that doesn't mean you should give him the opportunity."
With that said, she departed, leaving Gareth standing alone. She's right, he thought. I have to be smarter. I have to protect myself, so Guy doesn't have to. When he needs me, I'll be there to defend him. Finally, for the first time since he'd learned the truth of his title as the Shield, he felt a sense of true purpose. Almost 10 years later. 3 brothers, 3 missions, as decreed by the king. Prince Grian would oversee the final construction of the Bridge of Triumph, which was well on its way to completion. Prince Guy would cross the Spear with his legionnaires and attempt to take the border city of Felix from the west. Prince Gareth was heading south, all the way to the Skara Desert, where it was said the fighting with the Calypsians had grown fierce. Gareth wasn't pleased with being separated from Guy. "How can I be his shield when we're in different places?" he argued.
"It was your brother's idea," the king said, "and it was a good one. The latest streams made it clear that Felix is undefended. There will be little risk to the future king. The Skara, however, is a bloodbath. You will protect your brother best by forcing the barbarians back across the wastelands."
Gareth sighed. He guessed it made sense, but still, it felt odd leaving his brother's side after all these years. Ever since that day they survived the Iron Rapids, Gareth had been careful, never putting himself at risk unless it was to protect the future king. When they were well away from their father, Gareth pulled Guy aside. "Why are you doing this?" If anything, Guy's face had grown even more serious over the years, although he'd kept his hair longer than either of his brothers. "Doing what?" "You never were a good liar," Gareth said. "What do you know that father doesn't?" Guy sighed. "It doesn't matter." Gareth clutched his arm as Guy tried to turn away. "It matters to me." Another sigh. "Fine. There are western reinforcements heading from Night's End to Felix. I intercepted the stream before it reached father."
"You fool,"
Gareth hissed. "I'm going to tell him." "No." Now it was Guy's turn to stop Gareth from walking away, his grip firm and determined. "I'll deny everything I just said. I've already burned the message. Even the stream worker didn't have the chance to read it before I grabbed it. Who's he going to believe, the future king or the shield who desperately wants to defend his brother?" Gareth knitted his lips into a tight line. He wanted to scream. Would Guy never stop treating him like a child? Would he never allow him to do his duty? "This is the last time I leave your side. When we both return to Ironwood, and we will, I promise you, I'm going to tell father the truth about what happened that day when we were 8 years old. I'm going to tell him about all the other times you protected me and lied about it. I'm going to tell him about this lie. He might believe me or he might not."
"Agreed," Guy said.
"I won't dispute your claims. You must stop treating me differently. You must allow me to be your shield."
"I will," Guy said. "I swear it."
And though those were the words he'd been waiting years for his brother to say, they sent a shred of fear through him. He hid it behind an upturned jaw as they clasped hands and bid each other well on their respective missions. Several months later. After nearly half a year fighting on the fringes of the Skara Desert, the border was finally secure. Gareth longed to see the metal walls and trees of Faerir and Ironwood again. Most of his legionnaires had been relocated to the Spear, where Guy had been victorious against the West. "He's alive," Gareth thought. "I haven't failed him." The thought was a light through a fog. Several horses had been sent ahead to meet them in Barrenwood, while he took a few of his most trusted men in a small iron boat along the northern edge of Dragon Bay. Before returning home, he wanted to be certain there were no raiders trying to make landfall in Eastern Territory. Also, a brief paddle was just the thing to remove the sand and grit of months spent in the desert. Now, after an uneventful 5-day journey, they'd reached the barren marshes, where they'd row their way as far inland as possible, before resuming their expedition across dry land, to where their horses should be waiting. The barren marshes were an eerie place, the sky a grey blanket overhead, the air full of ghostly vapours swirling and misting.
Tall grasses and broad ferns stood sentinel along the water's edges, occasionally tufting from the middle of the marsh, forcing them to paddle left or right to avoid scraping the boat's bottom. Though it wasn't as creepy as the Rot, a swampland full of preserved dead bodies in the eastern corner of Hyrule Lake, Gareth was still anxious to be quit of this place as soon as possible. The sooner they were past it, the sooner they could ride for Faerea and he could be reunited with Guy. As he was contemplating what such a reunion would be like, one of his men hissed a warning and pointed to the side. Gareth squinted, his hand automatically reaching for the hilt of his sword. His grip relaxed, however, as the bedraggled form came into focus. A man, young-looking, clutching something between his hands, bobbing along the banks of the marsh. He had long golden hair and his clothes were filthy. He appeared to be awake, searching the sky and marshlands with wide, confused eyes. "Where am I?" he said aloud, as if speaking to the ghostly vapours. Gareth hesitated a moment, but then said, "The barren marshes, I'd say." The man's head whipped around, and when Gareth first laid eyes on him, it took his breath away. It wasn't until much later that he would remember that moment fondly, as the day he met Rhone Loren, true heir to the Western Kingdom.
Postlude 2. Verna Gerrick. The Western Kingdom, circa 60.
"We all must fight, Father,"
24-year-old Verna Gerrick said, pacing across the sunlit room. Ever since war had been declared on Crimea, he'd had a seemingly infinite supply of energy inside him that needed to get out.
"I'm an old man, son,"
Thomas Gerrick said, combing a hand across his head. Though he was 78 name days old, he still had a full head of thick hair. Once jet black, now it was sheened in a silver colour so bright it might have been mistaken for an iron helm from a distance. His face, however, told the true story, a tale of years spent exploring the new lands discovered 60 years earlier by his father, Heinrich Gerrick. The lines along his brow and on the edges of his eyes were as deep as the Phoenician canyons.
"You can't fool me with this bent-back routine, Father. I'm your son. I've seen you on the practice grounds. You wield a sword and shield as well as a man half your age."
"I won't fight," Thomas said, with a finality Verna had heard before. It meant the conversation was over. Verna blew out an exasperated breath, stopping to face his father. More and more, he couldn't understand his father's motivations. It was he who had taught him to stand up for what he believed in, to not allow a monarchy hundreds of miles away to control his life or the life of his people. And yet, when it came to war, his father drew the line.
"At least tell me why. You owe me that much."
"Owe you?" Thomas said, but there was a twinkle in his eye. "I owe you nothing, nor this land. I've given my life to ensure its success. All I've ever wanted is for Knight's End to thrive."
"You've given your time to this land, but not your life," Verna clarified. "I would die for our independence. Would you?"
"Yes." No hesitation.
"Then why won't you—"
"Because I made a promise to your grandfather," Thomas shouted, his fists clenched at his sides. Verna took a step back. Usually his father was in complete control of his emotions, something that had always bothered him. Now, there was a fire in his eyes that spoke of fervor and desire and—
"You want to fight, don't you?"
Verna said.
"What promise did you make to Grandpapa?"
Thomas sighed, striding over to the door leading out to the balcony. There was no hunch in his posture now, no signs of age or weakness. He placed his hands on the marble balustrade, gazing out over the city Verna had grown up in, Knight's End, his home, both their homes. Verna took a moment to collect his thoughts before joining his father. He had never met his grandfather, who'd perished somewhere in the northern hinterlands when Thomas was only 18 years old, more than 3 decades before Verna was born. Though he didn't truly know Heinrich Gerrick, the man responsible for discovering these lands while under command by the Crimean ruler, King Strait, sometimes he felt like he did. His grandfather came alive in the stories his father told him growing up, tales of discovered lands, countless adventures, and numerous brushes with death. But still, what did a man who died in the year 10 have to do with the war they faced now? Chewing his lip in thought, Werner stood next to his father. Night's End was spread out before them like a miniature city, the people so small from this height there might have been figurines moving hither and thither, conducting their daily business. Merchants hawking wares, couriers delivering messages, children running and playing. This was what they were fighting for, this way of life, unfettered by the exorbitant taxes and irrelevant laws of a ruler so distant he might have been on one of the moons. Thomas spoke at last, his words placed carefully, as if each might break if uttered too close together. I promised him I would never fight the crown. Werner was careful not to object too vehemently. This was a conversation that needed to be handled with care. The way his father spoke of his own father, he hadn't just loved him, he'd idolized him. Even if the Crimeans declare war on our people. Thomas shook his head. Our conversation wasn't that specific. That's because Grandfather couldn't predict the future. Had he known what we faced, surely he would tell you to fight. Surely he would fight with you. His father's eyes met his, and the look he gave him seemed fathomless. His dark eyes filled with an eternal well of experience and history, much of which Werner could never fully appreciate. You didn't know him. He was the greatest man I ever knew. The bravest, too. But he was no soldier. The thrill of discovery was what drove him, as well as his family. He wanted me to live, not die for a cause that could be avoided. If he were here today, he would tell me to surrender, to make peace with the crown, to live. Werner could read between the lines. But if it were up to you? Thomas smiled, but it was a sad smile, seeming to fall off his lips. I was born a revolutionary. Even at 18, when my father died, I wanted Night's End to be independent from Crimea. That's why my father made me promise him I never would. He's not here now. He's been gone a long time. His memory is as strong as ever. Time could never fade Heinrich Gehrig. And when I made the promise, he was breathing his last breath. A deathbed promise should never be broken. Werner soaked it all in, finally understanding a part of his father he'd struggled with for a long time. Still, you could be king, you know. After Heinrich had died, Kingstraid had appointed Thomas as protector of the Crimean expansion, which is what he called these lands. Though he governed Night's End, along with the other colonies spread across the west and east, he did so under Crimean authority. I have no desire for such absolute power, Thomas said ruefully. Which is exactly why you should rule. Son, you have an independent spirit and a quick mind. You remind me a lot of myself at your age. I am proud of you. I will not force you to make any promises. You must follow your own heart, and I must follow mine. Now please, allow an old man his rest. His mother's back was to him as he entered the room, but she saw him in the mirror. In the reflection, her eyes met his, and she smiled. Viola Gehrig was 20 years younger than his father, though age was beginning to catch up with her, too. A few years ago, she'd chopped her golden hair short, and now it was speckled with white that blended in like salt amongst sand. The most prominent lines on her face were around her lips, which were quick to smile. Her eyes were sparkling pools of blue that might have belonged to a woman half her age. She had a small button nose, which had saved Werner from inheriting his father's hooked beak, and butterfly lips that seemed full of mirth even when she was angry. Though that was a rare occurrence, even during dark days like these. She turned, her smile broadening even further. My son, give your mother a hug, or are you too old for such affections? Werner immediately felt better, despite his conversation with his father. I will be 100 before I outgrow affection for you, mother, he said. She stood, and they embraced. He lingered a moment longer than usual, relishing his mother's warmth, as much in spirit as in body. You look troubled, Verna. The wars of men weigh heavily on you. I can see it in your eyes.
Verna wasn't surprised. His mother had always been able to see to the core of him, or perhaps he just wore his heart on his sleeve.
Father will not fight. He told me about the promise he made to Grandpapa.
She held him back to look at him, and he was surprised to see a darkness fall over her face.
Your father has lived in the shadow of Heinrich his entire life. The man even casts a shadow in death. He was a legend, a hero. Thomas doesn't take promises made to him lightly.
I know, but nothing. Your father is his own man, and you are yours. Would you have him make your decisions for you?
Verna realized he hadn't been fair. He knew his father loved Night's End as much as anyone, probably more.
I will fight.
His mother nodded thoughtfully.
I know you will. But is that all you will do?
Verna cocked his head to the side.
What else is there? We are under attack. We must fight.
Her lips once more dancing with a smile, Viola said,
You have a mind for strategy, my son. You always have, since you were a little boy and defeated me in 7 moves when we played knights and dragons.
The memory made him smile. Verna had forgotten about that. He hadn't played the game in many years, his handmade set gathering dust in a chest somewhere. But still,
this isn't a game, isn't it? People's lives are at stake. All the more reason to be thorough in our planning.
What was she getting at?
Father is a wise man, Verna said slowly.
There's no disputing that, his mother said.
Then again, I remember when you beat him in 5 moves. A child's game. Grown men play for coin in the marketplaces. A game, then. For adults or children, it matters not. It isn't real. I will fight. That is all I can do.
As you say. But know this, Verna Gehrig. Our independence may hinge upon the voices in the council room. You may choose to be one of them, or stay silent. But you must live with the consequences.
Crimean trade had been cut off for only a week, and already the people of Night's End were in an uproar. Of all things, it was cheese that was the problem. Most of the colonists had developed a strange, almost addiction-like affinity for Crimean cheese. Though Verna hated to admit it, he missed it as much as anyone, that pungent taste on his lips, so sharp it made his tongue tingle. There were other Crimean exports being missed as well, everything from sheepskin boots to silk scarves to finely woven rugs and tapestries. It was causing dissension in the ranks. Already peacekeepers had been dispatched to break up 3 separate riots, and Verna knew it would only get worse before it got better. Even amongst the soldiers he was hearing complaints. They grumbled about the extra training hours. They grumbled about being ill-prepared for a war with the crown. They grumbled about old weapons and ill-fitting uniforms, and the weather being too cold to fight, or too hot, or too wet, or too dry. Basically, they grumbled about everything. Truth be told, Verna was beginning to worry his grandfather was right. Maybe it would be easier swallowing their pride and maintaining peace with King Strait, who was now said to be more than 90 name days old. Eventually, the old man would have to die, wouldn't he? Perhaps his sons would be more willing to grant Night's End its independence. What difference would a few years make?
I'm as bad as the rest of them, Verna muttered, staring out at the calm seas.
He stood on one of the 2 quiet docks, nestled along the western shores of the Bay of Bounty. Typically, at this time of day, the docks would be bustling with activity. Crimean ships would be docking, their goods being unloaded by burly, salt-stained seamen anxious to finish their tasks before exploring the city, bringing coin to the taverns and inns lining the cobblestoned streets. And local ships would be preparing to sail across the Crimean Sea with their own goods. Casks of fine wine from local vineyards, salted beef and lamb from the outlying farms of the western plains, sturdy leather boots, and on and on. Instead, a single merchant vessel rocked and bobbed, waiting to raise anchor and set sail for the western settlement of Talis. The sailors went about their tasks with an air of boredom.
Several out-of-work dock workers napped against wooden pylons, their caps pulled over their eyes. Verna had the urge to march over to them and offer a swift kick in the ribs and a strong suggestion that they join the army. Instead, he looked back at the water, which paved a glittering pathway all the way to the western horizon. The air was calm, the sky blue and clear, the sun shining pleasantly. Though he knew a storm was brewing out there somewhere, it was easy to believe they would be able to avoid it. The captain of the lone ship barked the command to raise anchor, and a large chain began to lift from the depths. Clearly this man believed it was safe to set sail. Captains were supposed to have good instincts, after all. The heavy clop of horse hooves pulled him from his childish revelry. He turned to face the rider, who was clad in mail, waving an arm and shouting something. Verna frowned, wondering what would cause a soldier to act so erratic. As he approached, his meaningless shouts became words.
"Hold the ship!"
he yelled. Verna glanced at the captain, who was also watching the rider, but who didn't seem to be able to hear his message yet.
"Captain!"
he said loudly.
"Lower your anchor!"
The captain glanced at him, seemed to consider whether he was bound by an order from a Garrick while on the deck of his own ship, shrugged, and then issued the command. It took another moment for his sailors to comprehend what he was saying, and then the massive iron anchor, which was halfway from the water to the ship's railing, dropped back into the water with a splash. The rider charged up, pulling his steed to a stop so close to Verna that he could see the flare of its nostrils.
"Why did I just halt this ship?" Verna asked. "Riders arrived from Talis," the soldier said.
He was even younger than Verna, no more than 16 if he was a day. His expression was half excitement, half terror, which, at that age, was much the same thing. Though Verna wasn't much older, being so young seemed like a long time ago.
"What riders?"
"Soldiers," the boy said, emphasizing the word.
"Half were injured. One was dead in the saddle."
Verna frowned. Talis was a hard 3 days' ride from Night's End. It wasn't the southernmost Crimean colony, but it was closer to Fanes than Night's End.
"There was a battle?"
The boy nodded in terror excitement.
"The Phoenicians?"
Though tensions with their Southron neighbours had remained high, there hadn't been a major attack by either side in over a year. The boy shook his head.
"No, the Crimeans."
He said the last word like some kind of a prayer. There was no mistaking the reverence in his tone.
"What?"
Verna was unable to mask his surprise. For one, he hadn't expected an attack for weeks, at least. Secondly, he'd thought the first battle would be at Night's End, as the Crimeans sought to slice a hole through the capital city. In fact, his father had already sent several fast warships into the Crimean Sea to patrol the waters and provide an early warning of an impending attack. Instead, King Strait had circumvented their defences already, making landfall further south. Realization spread like approaching dawn through Verna's mind.
"The attack will come from the land rather than the sea."
Verna was out of breath by the time he reached the castle's main atrium. Though he'd borrowed the soldier's horse from the docks, he'd sprinted from the stables through the various courtyards and gardens, comprising a total of 213 steps, a number which the King of Crimea supposedly believed to be lucky. The castle had been built a decade earlier on command from King Strait, who said his favourite colony needed a proper castle. Verna was of the opinion it was intended as a bribe to his father to ensure his continued loyalty and obedience. Little did the king know, his father cared little for gold and castles. All he cared about was peace and prosperity for his people. In any case, the Lord Protector of the Realm was sitting alone in his council room studying a map when Verna dashed up, sweating profusely through his thick trousers and linen shirt.
"Father, Talis, the Crimeans!"
he managed to get out between breaths.
"I know," Thomas said. "The rider stopped here first. I'm the one that sent him to the docks to stop the ship and to find you."
"Oh."
For some strange reason, he was surprised. Sometimes he forgot his father was the ruler. He'd just been so distant lately. Almost as distant as King Strait. He approached, still breathing heavily, wishing he hadn't run so hard. He leaned over his father, who'd gone back to studying his map. According to the soldiers who, his father swallowed hard, survived the attack, the Crimeans made landfall here.